Sandra Steingraber, you've just been released from jail on charges related to action against the proposed gas facility here near Watkins Glen. You've also been very active on the fracking issue. Recently, I've heard comparisons made between the work that you're doing now and the work that Rachel Carson did back in the 1960s. As an activist, an environmental activist today, how do your strategies have to differ from what her strategies might have been 50 years ago?
I think books held a different place in our culture 50 years ago. So for Rachel Carson, who was a very reclusive person who liked to let the data speak and liked to spin straw into gold, so to speak, by changing the evidence into lyrical language for her readers, she could create these beautiful books and then go off to her summer home in Maine and let them hit the bestseller list. I think my temperament is similar to Carson's, and so for me to play a leadership role in an activist movement is by force of will. As I say to people, I feel like I've had to grow a whole new brain in order to do that. So I think Carson might have been led to do something like that herself, but she died, right? She had metastatic breast cancer while she was writing Silent Spring, and so her life was cut short. And so it was left to other people then to recognize that Carson's words weren't all by themselves going to be turned into public policy, that our regulatory system is far more deaf to the emergence of science than you might think, and it doesn't change easily.
That makes it sound kind of hopeless from a perspective of an environmental activist, but obviously you talk about New York as being at a crossroads, and you must have this sense that it really could go either way, or else you wouldn't be here and be saying that. So what do you mean when you say that New York is at a crossroads, and people who agree with you on this subject, where do you see them needing to take their next steps?
Well, first of all, I mean, just to preface my remarks, I'm incredibly hopeful and excited about our situation. I do not have a sense of despair about this. First of all, I don't have time for despair. You know, we're in the fight of our lives here, and I'm playing to win. And in fact, in planning our next move and figuring out what's next, the biggest obstacle for me is this defeatism among people to think that they give up before they start. I mean, they look at the power of the oil and gas industry, which is truly the biggest industry on the planet, who has us here atop the Marcellus Shale. That's our bedrock. It happens to be full of bubbles of methane. And this industry now has us firmly in its crosshairs. And its business plans for us have nothing to do with the agricultural economy that we have, our wineries, the natural beauty that draws tourists, or with the health and well-being of the people who live here. But instead, view this landscape as overburden. That's their official name of the mining industry for everything that lies between the sunlit surface of the earth and their quote-unquote area of economic interest. It's called overburden. I call it my home. I call it the environment where I'm trying to raise my children, whose bodies are made up of the rearranged molecules of air, food, and water that come from this place.
That said, this is not a community that's entirely united around this issue, and a lot of people would say that this is an area that needs the kind of economic investment that could come from something like this. How do you reconcile your own passions and beliefs on this with the realization that other citizens like yourself might not feel the same way?
I think a lot of people are simply misinformed, and part of what I think is part of the intent of civil disobedience is to bring a media spotlight to a problem that hasn't received enough attention and get information out there. And so, in fact, nobody's arguing that using salt caverns to store pressurized gases is a jobs creator. It only creates a handful of permanent jobs. At the same time, energy is asking for tax cuts, which will harm the local school system. It will steal jobs from the tourist industry and from wineries. I mean, there are many people who come to Seneca Lake year after year who had vacation cottages, sometimes going back three and four generations. Well, who's going to do that if the roads are full of propane tankers hauling hazardous material. Nobody likes to drive in traffic like that, especially along scenic byways. Who's going to come and leaf peep here if there's a giant flare stack, which they plan for in their facility, 60 feet tall, which is very loud. It sounds like a jet engine. There is as much economic activity to be lost, probably much more, than there is to be gained. So at the very least, we should hit the pause button here and bring in an independent economic analyst to take a look at jobs provided, jobs lost, where the money is actually going. Because if, in fact, the Finger Lakes is being turned into the Nigeria for America, then all the money that will be made is simply going to this out-of-state corporation and isn't really sustaining the people who actually live here.